All of us like to come out on top, whether it's in competitive sports or even just the day-to-day game that we call life. But what does it take to win? And how can we apply these insights from a battle on the gridiron to our next meeting at work? It's time to get educated. Welcome, everyone, to Educated, a podcast with easy-to-follow academic discussion in the realm of psychology and other special topic areas. My name is Mario Ricchetta, and I'm feeling extra fired up for this episode, our sophomore season finale, which is our biggest episode to date. In this episode, we're going to talk about the psychology of winning. And we've got a big special guest to help us do so, someone who has garnered national attention for his ability to not only lead a team to victory, but to make winning an ongoing habit. And I am honored to welcome to the show from Cora Collegiate, located in Sault Ste. Marie, Ontario, Canada, Coach Tom Annett. Coach, it is an absolute honor. Thank you for stopping by on Educated.
Well, thanks for having me, Mario. I'm a big fan of the podcast. I listened to several episodes and super impressed and really happy to be here.
Well, the honor is definitely mine. Speaking of big fan, those of you listening can't see me right now. I'm even sporting my Cora football shirt because I'm such a fan of what Coach Annett has been doing with the program. And I want to kick things off just before we get started talking about the program and talking about the psychology of winning. What I'm really looking forward to in this episode, the way it's set up, is that we will undoubtedly be hearing a lot of stories, a lot of wisdom, sort of under that football umbrella. But what makes this episode so captivating is that the lessons shared will be no doubt related to not just football, but to everyday life as well. And we're really looking forward to that. So let's get into it. I want to provide a little background for our listeners. When we're talking about Coach Annett, we're talking about the Cora Colts senior football program. We're talking undefeated seasons. We're talking city championships. We're talking back-to-back provincial championships, which is equivalent to state championships for our listeners in the USA. But the reality is, before Coach Annett came to Cora, there was a period for the school of around 5 years or so where there was either like a one-win season or zero-win seasons. And now you come in, it's 2010, and you start to change all that. And the rumor has it that one of your first items of business, you got in front of your team and you said, look, our vision is to be the best football program in the country. So can you confirm whether this actually happened? And if it did, how did it go over telling a group who was consistently losing that the new vision is to be the best program in the nation?
Well, I'm impressed with your research, Mario. That did in fact happen. It wasn't my first year there I said that. A little bit more of a backstory. I came from Sir James Dunn High School, which I attended myself, and that's where I got my first head coaching gig. But I was kind of handed the keys to a Ferrari there. I didn't know at the time, but it was probably the most talented high school football team I ever coached. And we did win a provincial championship there. For those of you outside of Sault Ste. Marie, Sir James Dunn now closed and amalgamated with another high school. I thought maybe I was going to get moved to that new high school and get a lot of our players brought over, but I was sent to Cora, and they were pretty much on the brink of collapsing or folding their program at the time. And like you said, they hadn't won in several years. I took the approach that I coached the junior team the first 2 years there, which is the grade 9 and 10s, in an effort to build it. And I kind of begged a friend of mine, Steve Knott, to coach the senior team for a few years. Numbers were low, but he did an incredible job as a community coach bringing them along. But after 2 years of coaching the junior program, and we made great strides there, and the junior teams had some victories, but the seniors were still struggling, I thought it was time to move up into senior. And that's when I had that meeting at the conclusion of my second year or just prior to me doing my first year of senior. And like you said, when I made that statement, you know, that was a vision, and I knew that was a foundation for leadership, and you know, we had to set that vision or foundation. Basically, what I mean by a vision is, if we are firing on all cylinders in the not too distant future, you know, what would our program look like? And as you can guess, you know, there were some sideways looks. I got a few snickers and laughs in the room, but there was a handful of kids that bought the vision. They bought in, and eventually those kids became our leaders. And, you know, they did what we asked in the off season. They worked hard. And I can't say enough about those guys. And I love running into them in the community and sharing the success we've had more recently with them, and making sure to remind them that they are just as much a part of this success now as the kids on the current team. You know, it was really hard for those guys to put in all of that effort and you know, get their hands dirty there when there was maybe just a flicker of light in the super far distance. You know, knowing that they probably weren't, you know, we didn't win a lot of games. Even my first few years in the senior, we took our lumps, but what we were doing was setting that foundation. So, some of those players end up coaching for us now. One that comes to mind is a guy named Will Bazwa, who's one of the best coaches in our program, one of the best coaches in the city now, also coaches our wrestling program. But that's incredibly rewarding to me as a head coach to have a former player now who we can tell these stories, you know, about how these guys faced incredible adversity, basically knowing they were not going to win games. And, you know, a lot of times get beat pretty bad, but they still put in tremendous effort and hard work in the off season because, you know, it's easier to get all in and buy in when things are going well. It's a lot harder when you face some adversity or when you know there's not as much of an opportunity for success. So I can't say enough about those guys, and the ones that bought in, you know, truly are the foundation to our program.
So here you are, you're coming in, you're taking the reins of the core football program. Like you said, you're taking lumps, but you're building. And the goal is, of course, like we said, to become a top program in the nation. And now it's 10 years later, mission accomplished, my man. You guys are right in the mix. You've garnered national attention. You've become a top-ranked team in the country. And one thing that I've really heard you talk about through all of this, different interviews and so on and so forth, I've heard you consistently talk about the importance of developing a championship culture so that all of this could take place. Can you tell us a little bit more about how you define culture and why it's so important, and even how you instigated such a culture shift at Cora?
Definitely. I just want to piggyback off the last question a bit first, because you know, there's no real way to tell who the top program in Canada is, but I definitely think we're in the conversation now, like you said, with the success we've had recently. And you know, the way I would define that personally, and my views on what a successful program has changed over time. Of course, everyone loves the wins, but I think of it more now, if we could get in a time machine, go 10, 20 years in the future, and I could see which of our players are now great husbands, great fathers, you know, tremendous leaders within our community, people who give back. I mean, that's the true mark of a great program, in my opinion. So, you know, I just wanted to say that before I got to the culture aspect. But for culture, the way I define that, there's lots of definitions out there, and I've seen a lot and I've reflected on this a lot. But for me, the best one I heard is, culture is the beliefs that drive the behaviors and the experiences it creates. So in our program, our beliefs are our core values, which I'll talk about later, but they are commitment, compete, toughness, teamwork, and family. And those in turn, and we instill those, we do a ton of work to instill those, but those drive the behavior of our athletes. So if they truly believe in those, they're going to do things like be selfless, earn trust in their teammates, make sacrifices for others. So if those are beliefs that drive those behaviors, those in turn will shape our experiences. And in football, I always say the experiences are life lessons, memories, and friendships. And again, if we believe in those, we have true beliefs in our core values, and you know, they are driving those behaviors, we in turn will have greater memories that are more profound, more meaningful relationships and friendships, and those life lessons will be far more impactful. Okay. And it could work the opposite way. If you have a bad culture, kids are going to have terrible experiences, right? And get turned off to football. And I think we've made great strides in that area. And that's really kind of a mark of our culture, I think, is those experiences kids have. And, you know, I really believe that the lessons they learn in their short amount of time playing high school football carry over tenfold to real life beyond football. So I think that's pretty important. So in terms of how we, you know, how we develop that culture too, those core values aren't something that I just came up with. A really key step, no matter what organization you're in, I think is getting some ownership. And we had our players and alumni all have input into those core values. And we went through quite a process. We got a lot of great feedback, but ultimately it came down to voting and narrowing it down to five core values. So I think that process is important. Then once you have the core values, I mean, that's the easy part. Then you have to be intentional about them. And I see so many teams, but also organizations do this process of creating core values, but then they're just on some placard or poster on the wall, and then they're never really addressed anymore. So one of my favorite quotes from Urban Meyer, who's one of the top college coaches, now he coaches in the NFL, but he always says, average teams have quotes, good teams have a plan, and elite teams have a system. So in order to really have an elite culture, I think you need to have a system to instill it and teach leadership and character. And I'm not going to pretend to be the expert on this. We're still learning. I think we started making strides towards that elite culture. This COVID break is going to kind of set us back along with a lot of teams across the province, but I think we have the blueprints on how to get there anyway. I heard a story just recently that reminded me a lot of our program. You may have heard it. It's about the Chinese farmer and bamboo. And, I'll try and really simplify it here, but the gist of it is, if you're going to grow bamboo, you got to water it for 5 years. And you don't see anything grow. So you're watering it. And then once you hit that fifth year, there's a 6-week span where that bamboo is going to grow up to 90 feet in the air. And, you know, the lesson there is that during those 5 years prior to it growing, what was happening? Well, the roots were spreading, a massive network of roots to support that eventual fast growth. And if at any point in time you stop watering, even when you weren't seeing the results, you're not going to get that bamboo to grow. So it took a while for Cora to, get to that next level where we were winning championships. And even though I think we were making big strides, mostly in our culture, they weren't necessarily reflecting in terms of the win-loss column. But then all of a sudden, boom, it just took off. And again, thanks to those early players that bought in when the results weren't there, but that's that foundation we're talking about. And that's what's so tough, is to put in that time and effort when you don't see the results immediately. What else can I say here in terms of specific steps we took, or things I should say we've learned in this process of creating culture, is that it's all about relationships. That's something, I didn't fully understand when I got into coaching. I think it's a very common mistake for a lot of young coaches. And I think the ones that don't finally grasp that idea get burned out or turned off to coaching. But, we have a philosophy in our program now where it's people first, then process, then results. And people first is, we take care of the people in our program. That's everyone in our program. Players, people that bring the water out, teachers that support us in other ways, so it's support them, appreciate them, help them grow, let them know you love them. That's the foundation, no matter what. You win with people. Okay. It's nothing else. And then process would be things like, your systems, your schemes, working hard. And that's important too. Don't get me wrong, but you can have the best schemes and systems, but if you're not taking care of the people and they're not buying in, it doesn't matter. And then results is the last thing. That would be winning. And we almost never talk about winning in our program. I think if you take care of people and process, the results take care of themselves. So again, just a relationships number one, and taking care of people and understanding that idea is really the foundation of building your culture. If you want some actionable steps, I don't know how many football coaches we have listening, hopefully a few, but something we did was exit interviews at the conclusion of each season. We make an effort, and it's not always doable. We had some hiccups with COVID now and other challenges, but we'd like to sit down with each player and even coaches and reflect on the season. We have a series of questions to go through that really sets the foundation for that relationship and gives them ownership in the program and lets us develop a stronger rapport relationship with our athletes. Then we do all kinds of leadership development. In practice, we'll take time out of practice to do either storytelling, we'll do video clips, and you know, again, it's being intentional. Anytime we can intertwine our core values into things we're doing in practice, whether that's our drills, you know, our clothing, we always try and put our core values and our credo, our team credo on there. Awards, our signs that are up in our room, our social media, we're pretty active on Instagram, but you're going to see those core values and that credo and these life lessons constantly preached throughout there. So those are some of the actionable ideas, but you know, I hope that gave you an idea of some of the things we do to build culture.
Absolutely. I love that. When you're talking about culture, you're talking about people, process, and results. And in there, you also mentioned leadership. And I know that leadership is something that, again, just like with culture, you have talked about this over the years. I've heard you in many interviews, different clinics that you've hosted about winning culture. You consistently talk about leadership. And just one of the many ideas I've heard you talk to or talk about is the idea of leaders eat last. And I just want you right now, if you can you share a little bit more about how you define leadership and what being a leader means, first of all, to you as the person who's leading the team, but then also what do you expect from your players as leaders themselves?
Yeah, that saying leaders eat last has been really big in our program. And really it means being selfless, putting others before or above yourself, or servant leadership is another way to think of that saying. You know, we do a lot of work with our captains and we put a lot of thought, and it's quite a process when we pick captains too. It's not something just given. It's not a title because you're, you know, a senior or you play a certain position like quarterback. You know, and our players know that, and we are getting feedback from all areas on who our captains are going to be. Our player input is very important, but our coaches, staff, people around the school, so a lot goes into that decision, but once we have our captains, a lot of training, you know, we meet with them frequently and talk about that idea of servant leadership. Basically, it's their main job to help others grow and reach their full potential. The way we put that into practice in terms of leaders eat last, a lot of football programs and, you know, including Cora, I'll admit we did this when we weren't winning as many games, you know, it'd be the end of practice and those of you who played high school football, at the end of practice, there's kind of bags scattered everywhere, water bottles. And most teams, you'll hear rookies clean up. So if you're a rookie, you're there and all the seniors and captains go inside. Well, we flip that mindset and we let our captains know, you know, you are responsible for cleaning the field as captain. So you need to know what you're signing up for. And that's part of what we believe in, leaders eat last. And, you know, if any coaches are listening, it's such a great idea because it doesn't take long before a rookie's not going to sit there and watch a captain clean up his mess. So, but you know, it may take a week or so, but eventually the whole team's there cleaning. Whereas if we did it the other way around, you would only see the rookies cleaning the field, right? So if we have meals, we'll try and preach that our leaders eat last. Leaders are in charge of cleaning the bus. If we're at hotels, like they're the ones in charge of that stuff. But you know, other things it could be is just, in terms of leadership and servant leadership, maybe you see a younger guy having a hard time. It may just be making time to put your arm around him, you know, console him, encourage him. And that means a lot to those younger kids. And when you do things like this, it kind of sets, it helps, like in the future, works itself out because those younger guys seeing that eventually they're going to be the seniors on the team and they're going to be the captains. And they remember what it was like when they were struggling or thinking about quitting or had a bad day when that senior put their arm around them and how important it was. Okay. And that's a real culture driver for us, that servant leadership concept. In terms of, you know, what else we do or how I define leadership. I think leadership is influence. I mean, there's all kinds of definitions out there, but leadership is influence. And another way I heard it defined is it's getting people where they want to go, but sometimes by doing things they may not want to do. So leaders can help, you know, influence people to do these hard things sometimes or make these sacrifices that maybe they wouldn't do necessarily on their own. Again, just back to teaching leadership though, like if anyone's working with high school age kids, I think it's so paramount that you teach leadership. I've made this mistake of just assuming, you know, this kid leads by example. He does things right. So if I make him a captain, he's going to lead our team, but that's not how it works. And I'm seeing less and less of that with youth today. So if you're not teaching them how to lead, you're not going to get that. And we made exactly that mistake earlier in our career. And that was one of those epiphanies we had where we have to teach leadership and, again, be intentional with it. You know, in terms of my role as a leader in the program, well, again, use another analogy. I guess I would see ourselves like if it was a ship, I think our coaching staff makes the map. Okay. We provide a map for them. And then I tell our captains, you're the captains of the ship and the players are the crew. But we try and get them to have as much ownership as possible. I think elite teams have, you know, the players hold each other accountable. Another saying here is, you know, on bad teams, no one's held accountable. On average or good teams, the coaches are holding the players accountable. But on elite teams, which is we want to be, the players are holding each other accountable. So that's another thing. If you can get to that point where you're running a drill and a kid isn't putting in great effort, you know, and you see the captain step in and jump up before I can even say anything, you know, your culture's firing on all right. cylinders. Like that's a right. good thing. So another thing we'll do with leadership too, like I know I said, we teach it, but modeling leadership is obviously very important. So, you know, we're not perfect, but we make a great effort to do that. As my kids and some of our coaching staff kids get older, I think I would like to have them around the field once in a while so they could see our coaches being fathers. We have some great fathers in our program. But the other thing we want to do is give them tools to lead. I don't know if you're familiar with the Focus 3 group. That's a leadership group. They work with a lot of businesses, but we use a lot of their concepts. So some of these tools and a core of football rule our players hear all the time is no BCD. And BCD stands for blame, complain, defend, or deny. And that's, we don't have a lot of rules, but that's one. And we don't let our players complain. And you know, we'll say that, and you can almost guarantee it that first day because training camp's in August. Someone, usually a rookie, is going to say, oh, man, it's too hot out today. Boom, we're all over them. No BCD. You can't do no BCD. And, you know, sometimes the kids will catch me BCDing, and they call me out on it, and I love that. But that's, we won't let our kids blame, complain, defend, or deny because that can spiral out of control in a hurry. You know, one of the more obvious ones in sports is officiating. Like, we will never allow kids to say anything about the officiating, like the heat, the cold, you name it. And another really big tool for us has been the idea of E plus R equals O. And what that equation stands for is E is event plus R is your response to that event equals O, which is the outcome. If you look at that equation, you really don't have much control over the event or the outcome. But we tell our players, you always have control over your response. So whether that's a call you disagreed with, you don't control that event, but how you respond to it, you 100% control. Okay. And that combined with the event will determine the outcome. So that's just a tool. And we try and apply that, not just in a sport context, but we'll try and use real life situations. You know, where kids, typical things teenagers run into, some difficult circumstances. And we really try and boil it down to that E plus R equals O to help guide them in life.
I want to flip the script for a moment. You're without a doubt, when you explain, you know, these pieces of wisdom, these insights, culture, leadership, everything's firing on all cylinders. There's so much to be said here about, you know, of course, there's no doubt now how you have been building such an elite program with all of these in place. I want to flip the script for a second. I want to talk about the opposite of winning for just a moment, even though this episode is about the psychology of winning. I want to talk about losing for a moment, maybe even extend that to just the whole idea of failure. I've been doing a lot of reading, and in the research right now, a lot of experts are saying that younger kids these days are having a harder time than ever coping with failure or knowing what it means to lose or to fail at something. I want to get your take on this, Coach. Do you agree that young people nowadays are struggling more than ever with failure? And if so, why is this? And how do you go about tackling this with your squad?
I do think that's true. I mean, I don't have any concrete data on it, but being in education for, you know, 16, 17 years now, anecdotally, I am seeing that. And I have some ideas why that's happening. I think one of the big ones, I got a few ideas, but I think one of the big ones is social media and not just social media, all media, that everything's recorded now. Like every game we play is recorded. There's people recording our games on their own cell phones on top of that. everything they do is recorded. And if there's ever a mistake or a failure, now it's kind of archived and rebroadcasted. You know, and I can understand the challenges of that and how that changes compared to maybe when I was in high school, where that wasn't really a thing. You did something stupid, it was kind of forgot about in a few days, you know, whereas here it can be brought up, rebroadcast, memed, who knows what they're going to do, right? And as a result, some kids are less likely to take chances. Different thoughts on this too, you know, that everyone's a winner type thing at a young age. I'm not against that to a certain age, but at some point that's got to stop. You know, or kids don't know how to deal with failure. Other contributors there, you know, when I was in high school, obviously I was not having any communication with my parents, but I just asked a grade 9 class back when we were in school. I said, how many times, like how many kids here text their mom or dad during the school day at least 5 times? Like almost every hand went up, and I kept going up in numbers, 20 times, 30 times. There's a couple kids that had 50 different text message exchanges with their parents throughout the day. And, you know, I'm not saying don't communicate with your parents, but, you know, sometimes the saying that comes to mind here is sometimes we have parents preparing the path for the child instead of preparing the child for the path. These kids need to fail on their own and learn to deal with these situations, especially by the time I think you hit high school. There's a problem in class, talk to the teacher. If you're worried about your playing time as a player, talk to the captains or a coach first, rather than going right to a parent. And I think that helps, you know, teach some of these processes. But, you know, one of my favorite college coaches, PJ Fleck, and I love this quote from him. He said, "It's my job as your coach to get you to fail every day, but to be excited to come back and try again the next day." And what we really constantly try to preach to our players is that failure equals growth. Okay. Failure equals growth. And the most successful people in the world fail the most often. We're constantly telling our players that. So we can't let these changes in society affect us, because that's holding you back as a person, and it's holding you back from reaching your full potential. So you can't fear failure. And some ways we try and teach that. I mean, one of our core values is compete. We will put them in competitive situations, and we will put them in situations sometimes where even we know they're not going to be successful. We may put a kid against a bigger, older, stronger kid almost to see how he's going to react. And in Navy SEALs training, they have something called getting sugar cookied. I'm pretty fascinated with the military because I think they're the ultimate leaders in some of the training they do. But you know, there's a process each morning where they have to dress perfect and stand on guard, and they get inspected. And once in a while, you know, the drill sergeant, whoever it may be, will find something wrong with them. He'll say, like, there's a slight wrinkle here, whatever it may be. And there may not even be anything wrong, but they just pretend there is. And as a result, they got to go roll around in the wet sand until there's sand all over them. Then they're doing all their drill training, running all day with sand grinding on them. And they call that getting sugar cookie. So I tell our players, you know what? Sometimes you're going to get sugar cookie. A coach is going to get mad at you or put you in a situation where you can't be successful. Or, you know, I'll accuse you of not running through the cones in this drill, even though you did, almost because I want to see how they react. So that's kind of part of their training there. But yeah, like we put them in competitive situations where they're going to fail in practice. We taught toughness is another core value, and we want them to get comfortable being uncomfortable. That's how we define toughness. And we always tell them tough people do tough things. I'm sure you're pretty well read. I know, I'm sure you heard of growth mindset. I think it's Carol Dweck is the author, but really it comes down to that. And those of you who aren't familiar with that work, I highly encourage you to check it out. But she talks about two groups, growth mindset and fixed mindset. And she's found that people with what she calls a growth mindset, that's one of the best indicators for success as an adult in life. And these are people who want critique and criticism. They don't fear it. These are people that want to be around people that are more successful than them, whereas someone with a fixed mindset might be intimidated by those people. There are people who don't fear failure. There are people who want to seek out challenges versus avoid them. And the good news is, if you find you're in the fixed mindset, and we all are, I mean, there's situations in my life, right, I'm in there, but you can change it. And that's part of the idea of having a growth mindset is, you know, it's not, oh, I suck at math, I'm not going to try. If I work at this, I can get better. If I'm out of shape, I can work to get in better shape. So just kind of a mindset has really helped with that fear of failure as well.
I love that. Failure equals growth. And then when we're looking at growth, we could swing the pendulum back getting back to the winning side of the coin. I want to finish up by asking you this. You've shared with us about culture. You've shared with us about leadership. You've talked about some other key components of your team's identity, you know, rooted in those core values, some of which you've discussed in this podcast, the core values that you guys promote, the ones that you live by, and also your team credo. Now, your team credo, tough people win. What do these three words mean to you, Coach? And what do they mean to your team? And how can we extend their meaning from the gridiron to just everyday life and situations?
Yeah, that's really fundamental to our program. Tough people win. We abbreviate it TPW. It's everywhere. Okay. It's you go on our social media, it's on every post, it's hashtagged, it's on our gear. We actually have it on our helmets. On the front bumper there is a TPW decal. You name it, it's there. And it's even caught on through other areas of our school, which I love. You'll hear other teachers say it. You'll see other teams or clubs adopt it. It's on morning announcements. So it's become a part of our culture. Now, I understand hearing that, and people outside of our building may even see that as a bit arrogant. And I understand how it may come across that way. But anyone inside our building, or especially in our program, knows it has nothing to do with that. It's nothing to do with the scoreboard. When we say tough people win, we're talking about life. Okay. And I like to think that our players and people in our program and our whole school now, for that matter, have a working definition of what it means, of what the word toughness means. You know, you may ask a couple grade nines brand new to our program, and, you know, they may think it might be the guy who's, you know, the toughest in the ring or can win the most fights or something. And by the time they graduate, that's a completely different view of what toughness means. And this is such a huge part of our leadership training and our culture building. So, you know, toughness can be having a difficult conversation with someone. Okay. And again, we define toughness in our program as get comfortable being uncomfortable. Sure, we all know physically, like if you're pushing yourself in the gym or running, yeah, that's uncomfortable and you got to push yourself physically. But, you know, the social or mental aspect is a huge part of it too. So it could be a difficult conversation, could be walking away from an altercation. So many teenagers, especially teenage boys, sometimes are put in these really risky, vulnerable situations. And there's a lot of pride there. And I get it, with especially with teenage boys and testosterone, but they can get themselves in a lot of trouble. So toughness might mean walking away. It could be helping people in need. It could be making sacrifices for others. So when we say tough people win, really, that's what we mean. And it's been critical to our program and our culture, within the team and the whole school now, I would say.
Coach, it's been an absolute honor picking your brain in this episode, hearing your stories, hearing your wisdom, the insights you have about winning and building such a successful program. I know that our listeners will want to hear even more from you, from the team. So I want to urge everyone right now, head on over to Instagram. You're going to search up at Kora Football. That's KORAH Football. And you will see firsthand what culture, what leadership, and what identity look like as part of the Kora Football program. You'll see what's brought them to the success that they've earned thus far. And you'll even get to be a part of watching the 2021 reload, which I know is happening right now. You guys are looking ahead to next season, defending that championship Kora ring. I want a Kora ring, by the way. They are beautiful. But once again, for everyone listening at home, at Kora Football on Instagram, you'll follow it up. And you'll be able to keep in touch with all things Coach Annett, all things Kora Colts football program. Tom, it's been an absolute honor. It's been my privilege to talk to you today. Thank you so much for coming on to share your insights about winning.
My pleasure, Mario. It's been a blast. I love what you're doing with the podcast, and I look forward to listening to future episodes.
Well, we couldn't think of a bigger way to end the sophomore season of Educated than having Coach Annett stop by talking about the psychology of winning. We want to say thank you to every single listener who has tuned in. At the end of two seasons, we are looking at listeners from 35 countries and counting. So on behalf of all of us at Educated, thank you for another amazing year of teaching, of learning, and like Tom said, storytelling, also important to learning and to being better versions of ourselves. And to our listeners, you've been asking for the last little while, you've been asking for more information. Will there be another round of Educated, another season? I can officially tell you, you're hearing it here first. Class will indeed be back in session in the fall, September 2021. Get ready. It's our junior season of Educated, season 3 coming your way. So stay tuned. And until then, take care of each other. Have a safe and restful summer. And don't forget, tough people win.
And tough people get educated.